Welcome back to Beyond Well. I'm Sheila Hamilton, and this is a program for people who want to learn more about our interior lives. And when you think about pain, you don't necessarily think about it as something that's emanating from the brain. But according to Dr. Afton Hassett, most of our pain originates in the brain. And if we can learn ways to actually reset our brain and cope with chronic pain, we can have the kind of lives that we talk about here on this program, filled with meaning and hope and productivity. Dr. Hassett has written the book, Chronic Pain Reset, 30 Days of Activities, Practices, and Skills to Help You Thrive. And it's wonderful to see you, Afton. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Sheila. I love your podcast. I'm so happy to be a part of it.
So talk to me about how you got started in pain research. It's such a niche area.
You know, I think many of us end up here by accident. That certainly was true for me. I was working on my clinical psychology doctorate, and I was working at a center, working with these very, very lovely women outpatient. And I had kind of an epiphany that every time I seemed to make progress in therapy with people on depression and anxiety, that we'd make some progress and then there'd be a backslide. And the backslide often was brought on by the chronic pain. And so I would not see patients for a couple of weeks. And it was so frustrating. Like, oh my gosh, you know, I feel so stuck. And so I went to my supervisor, who's a very wise woman, Martha Truax, and she said, hey, there's a really important intersection between pain and mood and trauma. And you know what? You might want to learn more about these pieces. And so she sent me to the University of California at San Diego Medical School Library. And I dug around and pulled everything I could on chronic pain and emotions and coping and mind-body, and was just hooked. I thought that was the most incredibly fascinating phenomenon that thinks and feels impacts pain and vice versa. And so I was really kind of addicted at that point. And I went and changed my dissertation topic soon after. And I've been here ever since.
I think right now is probably the most interesting time. And I say interesting just because I'm watching it from afar and not suffering from chronic pain. But because we had the opioid crisis and then doctors pulled back on the use of opioids for pain, I am hearing so much more about people suffering debilitating chronic pain that is not being managed. Are you seeing the same thing, and how is that affecting people's moods, ability to fulfill their lives?
You know, the data aren't great that opioids help people with chronic pain, but some people with chronic pain really benefit from opioids. And so I think the pendulum swung really far to the other side, and it took away the medication that many people really felt that they needed to survive. And so I think that was really a miscarriage and super frustrating for, you know, for physicians who want to help more, but also feeling hand-tied. So what we have kind of come to in our clinic is that, you know what, let's see if we can find out who's not really benefiting from opioids and get them off, and, you know, and then identify those who do and allow them to have kind of sane, you know, treatment. And so what we encourage people to do who have chronic pain and have been on long-term opioid therapy and who still have a lot of pain, we encourage them to do an opioid experiment, which means to work with your physician and slowly taper down the opioids in a really safe way. Give yourself a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks without being on opioids, and see how you feel. And at that point, many patients say, I don't believe this, but I have less pain. I'm sleeping better. My mood is better. It's amazing. We're like, okay, so you benefited from the opioid experiment. So let's find you other medications and other practices that can probably help you with your pain. Others, you know, would get to the end of this and say, I am sorry. I'm in so much pain. It's like, okay, your opioids were helping. So that's where we're at. So I think taking this more nuanced approach is really a better service to our patients with chronic pain.
I was really struck by it the last American Association of Suicidology, that a growing number of people who are dying by suicide didn't have previous depression or bipolar disorder in their lives. They were suffering from chronic pain. And so it's showing to me that the problem affecting 50 million people in the United States is kind of not talked about as one of the biggest problems that we have in this country.
Those of us who do the research and talk to people with who live with chronic pain day in, day out, and it's so obvious that it is a gigantic problem for the healthcare system, for the individuals who suffer, because we don't have silver bullet treatments. Right. Almost every treatment we have, be it medication or a non-pharmacological intervention like, you know, therapy, physical therapy, exercise, or psychotherapy, each of these treatments we put forward, only about a third of people respond to them. And we don't know who responds to what. And that really is at the core of a very large study that we have from the National Institutes of Health as part of their HEAL initiative, is for us to understand better who responds to what treatment and how do they work best. And so that's something that we're testing now, comparing medications to physical therapy, to behavioral interventions, to kind of more self-management or kind of mHealth apps and that kind of thing that can kind of help with self-management. So we're trying to answer those questions now. But again, we don't have, you know, a good silver bullet kind of intervention.
You know, it was funny. This morning I was playing pickleball and my friend was talking about this chronic pain in her shoulder. And I was thinking, it's so interesting that people put their finger on the joint that hurts, but the messaging system is actually all up here. So if we were accurate, we'd be going, my shoulder hurts, right?
I haven't heard that said before, Sheila. I love it. This is true. Right. Pain is in the brain. You know, right. If you think about people who have surgery, right, they're anesthetized, right, and there's a big cut in the body. There's a big surgical incision and there's no pain there until the patient wakes up and the brain is processing information again. Yeah. Then it hurts because it is the brain. And what we study in our center is really the role of the brain in pain, especially in people with chronic pain, where we believe and can show that frequently the brain itself is generating the pain. Mm-hmm. Or at the very least amplifying a signal that might be more benign.
Yeah. Yeah. So it may be, and I think this is even true for people who have just a little bit of osteoarthritis, that there are days when you can totally manage the pain and there are days when it feels like it's excruciating. Now, the osteoarthritis hasn't changed in a day. Your brain's chemical messengers, the neurotransmitters, are having a different field day with the pain that day, correct?
Oh, absolutely right. And what's amazing is what's changing that milieu, what's changing that little mix of neurotransmitters and inflammatory factors often is what's happening in the environment. So it's, are we exercising? Are we eating well? Did we sleep well? Are we thinking really distressing thoughts that are making us feel anxious and stress activated? You know, are we so sad that, we're dumping chemicals constantly as we experience life and our emotions and our thoughts and our behaviors. And that all impacts the actual physiological experience of pain.
Are there different exercises for the different types of chronic pain? Because you name inflammatory, mechanical, neuropathic, which is, I've had neuropathic pain before.
Awful.
That's bad.
Nociplastic
pain, which is fibromyalgia and chronic low back pain. Are there different exercises that you would suggest for each of those different types of pain?
So we certainly do treat them differently. So that's kind of the first thing. There's certain medications that are used to treat inflammatory pain and different medications that are used to treat neuropathic pain.
Yeah.
And certainly different approaches to osteoarthritis and kind of these, these kind of mechanical pain states. And then very different approaches to kind of this, what we call nociplastic pain, which is this very strongly brain mediated pain. So yes. So when you say different exercises, yes and no. I mean, if we're talking in terms of a physical therapist, he is certainly going to recommend a different set of exercises for somebody who has, a fibromyalgia versus somebody who has osteoarthritis of the knee, right? So very personalized. And I do suggest that people, meet with a good physical therapist and occupational therapist and, try and get something that makes sense for you. And we certainly want to exercise, almost all of us, but again, we want to make sure that it's something that your physician says, you should exercise.
When you talk about these other, the 30 days of exercises, many of them originate in cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy. What I'm trying to get at is it really doesn't matter what type of pain you have. Those exercises can be helpful for anyone, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah. So you're referring more specifically to like the activities and skills that we have people march through on those 30 days.
Yes.
Yeah. My book was set up to help people have access to all of these wonderful strategies that we have evidence for that are helpful for people with chronic pain, that we do just a lousy job getting to people's hands,
yeah.
right? And many of them are born from the behavioral therapies, cognitive behavioral therapy, and so on. All of these can be helpful for any type of pain, because a lot of them are encouraging how we cope, how we decrease our stress, how we teach ourselves to sleep better, and how we have just better, healthy social interactions. Because we know these are all the components of resilience.
Mm-hmm.
If we can build our toolbox, the things that we can lean on that help us through hard times, to help us cope with stress, we build that toolbox. We just make ourselves stronger across the board. So yes, they work for all types of pain. And I always tell folks that, yes, my book is written for people with chronic pain, but about 25 of the 30 days pertain to everybody. Those strategies are just human living skills. So if you have mental health issues, if you don't have mental health issues, if you have relationship issues, I mean, all of these are skills that make us stronger and more resilient.
I also just like that. I think it's not very accessible for Americans in particular to learn about how to think and what to do with our thoughts and how we should be directing our thoughts. And I mean, positive psychology just got such a bad backlash. And in some ways, it actually is the difference between people being able to live well or suffer. And I like that a lot of those are grounded in positive psychology as well. Many pain patients will say, don't teach me how to avoid my pain, fix my pain.
Yeah.
And they don't, then they bristle at the idea that there are some exercises you could do to redirect your attention. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to that?
I get it. I think when we're ever in pain, it's like, somebody make this stop.
Yes. Yeah.
it's kind of what we understand about any chronic illness. You know, if you have diabetes, you want somebody to make your diabetes go away. You know, it's a chronic illness. You
That's
have heart
right.
disease. You want somebody to make your heart disease go away. So the beauty of chronic pain, though, is there are some interventions that will make the pain go away. You know, a certain subset of people who have nociplastic pain that can try strategies that literally rewire the brain, that almost they kind of trick the brain, that reassure the brain that it is not in danger. Because remember, pain is good. Pain is what teaches us not to do things that hurt ourselves. If people are born without pain receptors, don't live long because they get themselves in trouble because they're afraid it's going to hurt. So pain is actually good for us. But the problem is when pain becomes chronic, and what often is happening there is the brain is too readily saying something is painful.
Mm-hmm.
And the brain is too readily detecting something as threat.
Yeah.
And so really pain is an alarm. Pain is says, hey, something's wrong here. And so if you are having a lot of stress and a lot of fear, and that can trigger pain. And so people who have pain that's triggered very frequently by almost like this false alarm, we can teach them how to deactivate that alarm. And for many people, it's like, oh my gosh, the pain is gone.
Why don't you talk to us just about a couple of your favorite exercises that seem to have this kind of universal approach?
Yeah. So the things that I really enjoy, and then most of us can actually work on, are things like sleeping better. I think insomnia is a huge problem beyond people with chronic pain, but it really is so tightly tied to pain. And so I think there's a lot that we can do to improve our sleep. And one of the things that we have the most evidence for is just going to the bed at the same time every night and getting up at the same time every morning. Is we call it sleep stabilization, but it just means that. And then on Saturdays and Sundays, maybe you sleep an extra half hour, but nothing more.
Yeah.
Right? Your body loves rhythm. It loves predictability. The more that you kind of eat at the same time and do things regularly, the happier your body is and happier the circadian rhythms. Also getting light in the morning, you know, the first hour that you're awake, get some bright light. If you can sit and have your cup of coffee and the sunshine, you know, in the windows and allow the light to come in, that can be really, that can be a high hit thing. But there's other things that we can do. You'd mentioned thoughts. is recognizing what thoughts cause us stress and trying. I have four different approaches to challenging our thoughts and how we think about ourselves, because so frequently our thoughts are self-defeating. We can be our own worst enemy and how we, you know, kind of the internal conversation that's going on, and recognizing some of these thought patterns that are not adaptive and not helpful. And I think this is really critical for people, you know, even who have anxiety, depression, and other, you know, mental health, but really important for people with chronic pain too, because anything that increases stress makes life worse. And then from borrowing from the positive psychology world, there's a lot to be said about having a gratitude practice.
Yeah.
Every day thinking about the things that you're grateful about, and even just writing them down, you know, keeping a little bit of a gratitude diary, because we as humans really look for the negative. It's what we do. It's adaptive. We need
scanning for tigers out there.
Scanning for tigers. And what we do is that we miss the butterflies, right?
Yeah.
So it's harder for us to encode that. And so we really have to be mindful about recognizing those moments that are beautiful and special, and for which we are grateful, and making notes of that. And then I think I love the literature on purpose in life too.
Yeah.
And it's something we see so disrupted in people with chronic pain that, you know, they feel like their lives were going down this path, and often they're really successful people that are, you know, really gaining energy in their life at about the time the pain hits.
Yeah.
And it derails their whole sense of where they're going, their purpose, their self-image, and really taking the time to revisit where you go next and what feels meaningful and what feels purposeful. And it's hard to do when you hurt, but so many of the people I know who have lived with chronic pain for a long time and have been successful really look back and say, you know what? I won't ever tell anybody I love my chronic pain, but I will tell you that I love where my life is now because it made me rethink what I was doing, my priorities, and what I'm doing now in my life. And so that is so powerful, to come to the point in your life. And I have these reflections in my book. I have like 13 lived experiences. And often it is, it's just people just kind of thinking, what is my purpose and how has this changed? And you know, and it's okay. It's not the life I would have picked for myself, but it's a good life.
You know, I've had this conversation with quite a few people who are going through either depression or anxiety about, is it possible for you to both acknowledge that you're going through this difficult period and also move toward what you value, move toward your grandchildren or your garden or whatever it is that you're passionate about? And there is some trick the brain plays on people with anxiety and depression that says you must attend to this anxiety and depression and not move forward. How do you get people out of that rut? Because it is very, very difficult.
It's so powerful. And so our brain takes in about 20,000 little pieces of stimuli every second, right?
Yeah.
And so really busily scan, you know, it just dumps almost everything else and it'll focus on something that's prominent. Pain is a bully. It's prominent. Depression is a bully. Anxiety are bullies. And they scream to be noticed because they are a threat. And the brain is recognizing as threat.
Yeah.
Part of what we need to do is recognize this depression will not kill me.
Yes.
It is a feeling. It is a mood. It is a thing. I can step back from it and say, you are interesting.
Yeah.
You are just one of the many things I'm experiencing right now. And I'm going to choose to let you sit on the side for a few minutes, and I'm going to enjoy this moment with my best friend.
I love that. Why do you think it is that the SSRIs that have a pain relieving quality tend to be the most popular? Is it the chicken or the egg? Does the pain cause the depression, or does the depression cause the pain?
So we've done some really interesting studies trying to understand it, because, you know, it's hard for people with chronic pain because they often get put into this bucket that, oh, well, you have depression or anxiety. Your chronic pain is just, you know, expression of your depression or anxiety. And many of them say, no, no, my mood is okay. And maybe if I'm more anxious, it's because I have pain.
Yeah.
And so we see this kind of 50-50 that some people have a history of anxiety, depression, they develop chronic pain, very common. Other people have chronic pain and then to develop a history of anxiety, depression. Other people have chronic pain and they have no mental health history. They're very resilient.
Wow.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. At least 30 to 40% of people with chronic pain have no.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, easily.
That's the most shocking thing you've said. Yeah. That almost, really shocks me.
That's what got me here.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yes. Because I had the exact opposite understanding when I was doing my dissertation. I wanted to really show that how depression and negative thought process like catastrophizing really drive processes like fibromyalgia, and less so like rheumatoid arthritis that are inflammatory.
Right.
I failed, because there's a large subset of people who are just really mentally healthy and really resilient, and they plug along and they hate their pain like anybody else, but for whatever reason, they don't have that predisposition. And so I've studied them. They've really been my target. Who are these people?
And so what have you found? Is it because of the daily habits, the way that they have been raised? Is it a lack of trauma? That kind of early churning of the brain that amped it up to be scanning for threat?
Yeah, I think you're right on the mark. I think trauma is a big one that really coincides with pain and depression within people with chronic pain. And I think the people who are resilient often have really healthy relationships. Mm. So they have a real strong sense of social support, and they also tend to be really good copers. Mm-hmm. So, they're like, okay, I will, they're flexible. They have a lot of psychological flexibility. They're not tough on themselves. So they're like, okay, well, this is just kind of is what it is. Or I made a mistake. They have a growth mindset that, okay.
Yeah.
So they just are both cognitively, behaviorally, and socially resilient. They just have these things in place, but it's the same stuff that makes any of us resilient.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm very curious, what has been the most painful thing that you have been through, and how do you use that experience to relate to or empathize with your patients?
So, I tell the story in my book that the worst thing, the most painful thing I experienced is I broke my kneecap.
Oh,
It was so painful. I didn't even understand what I had done. I just kind of hobbled over. I was in a coffee shop, and I was walking along with my latte, and I stumbled over a floor mat that had gotten crimped up, and I went flat down, knee face plant, right on a ceramic floor, and my knee was so bad I could barely make it to the booth. And they were kind enough to mop up my coffee, and it brought me a coffee. And I had a meeting to go to. So I went to the meeting, and after the meeting, I couldn't move my knee. Wow. And throughout the meeting, I feel like I was going to cry because it was so much pain. Mm. And it was terrible. And so I ended up, long story short, I ended up seeing a physician's assistant who kindly told me that I did indeed break my knee, but he said, what's weird though is, we did x-rays on both knees, and he said, so you broke your right kneecap, you broke a patella, it's a clean break, we're not gonna have to operate, it's great, we'll just immobilize you, but you have osteoarthritis in that right knee. But I'm really curious about your left knee. The osteoarthritis in your left knee is terrible.
Wow.
He says, does that left knee hurt? I said, no, it's a little stiff sometimes, but it never hurts. He's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah.
Wow.
And that coincides with what we see, that MRIs are notoriously not terribly predictive of what people are experiencing.
Level of pain people are having. Wow, that's so fascinating.
No, and so you can have just a terrible looking knee, hip, back, and report no pain. And other people say, oh my gosh, I have the most excruciating pain. And you'll look at the MRI and it's like,
nothing.
Oh my goodness.
That's so fascinating. And it just shows how different our neurotransmitters are, how much activity there is going on. You wonder if an MRI that actually showed what lit up when you pressed on the painful part would be more indicative of how their pain measurement would be, right?
Yeah, totally.
So fascinating. I have just a personal story to share. I've been an athlete all my life and broken many bones, wrists, falling off bikes, getting thrown off horses, but I froze my feet on a story that I was doing for the ABC network and really froze them terribly. And so I had nerve pain.
Oh,
as the nerves come back to life. I have never experienced anything so debilitating in my life. And I wonder if when you categorize pain, is nerve pain among the ones that people say, this I cannot cope with? It is so, or is that just my personality, my biology, my brain?
I think it's a little bit of each. And as you were talking about that, it just occurred to me that, worse than that knee pain was when I had an epicoectomy, and then that is also nerve pain there too.
Right.
I felt like somebody was taking a hammer in my jaw, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And it was like, and I was like, give me drugs now. My husband's like,
I
okay,
know. So
now
much for your
call the dentist,
cognitive behavioral
more drugs.
therapy.
Yes. But see, that's acute pain and it responds to the
Totally.
drug. So
Yeah.
it's, okay, that's my excuse. That's a story I'm telling. I do think that it's right up there, but you know, I haven't had a baby myself. So I do hear tell that childbirth is quite excruciating. So
That compared
the
to
nerve
the
pain.
nerves in my feet coming back online, childbirth was a one and the other was a 10.
That amazing.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? So it just goes to show you, some of us can't take pressure, some of us can't take sharp pain, some of us
Heat.
can't take heat, some of us can't take cold. Oh my gosh, I have loved talking with you, Afton.
Thank
It's been
you.
so interesting. Well, I read the Chronic Pain Reset, not because I'm currently experiencing pain, but because I thought the activities were so helpful around building resilience and that kind of values-oriented life that will make all of us feel healthier. The book is called Chronic Pain Reset, 30 Days of Activities, Practices, and Skills to Help You Thrive. And we've been talking today with Dr. Afton Hassett. Dr. Hassett, what a delight to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you.